right, I think we're ready to go. It's 3 o'clock. It's time for our last education session of the day. I'm John Schulberg, the editor of the Waterways Journal, and our session now is called EPA Tier 4 Emissions, DEF Urea Supply Chain. Our moderator is Jerry West. He is ahead in here. He's right here. He's a product manager for EMD engines. Is that good enough? More than that? And so I'll hand it over to Jerry. He can introduce the others. So.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. So we're going to, it's an education session. So some of the challenges our team has had over the past couple months is, have you ever had four engine manufacturers agree on the same thing at the same time? Okay, but we're actually going to accomplish that today. So to my left here is Dave Reynolds. He's from Economy Boat Store. He's going to be talking urea supply chain. As Tony Odak, next to him from Stone Oil, he will be also talking about midstreaming with urea and the IMO 2020 global impact that we're going to have on fuel. To the left of him is Jason Spear, product manager for Caterpillar Marine. To the left of him is Tracy Laborde, representing Mitsubishi Marine Engines. And on the very, very, very far end, we have David Hurt from Cummins, who's a product manager for their marine site out of Charleston. So with that, we're going to make it short and sweet. We want to have at least 10, 15 minutes for questions at the end. So I'll get started on it. So first thing, what is selective catalytic reduction? Well, first of all, it's a very old technology. It was patented in the United States in 1957 by Engelhard Corporation, and it actually started in mobile applications in Europe in the early 1990s. So basically, I'm not going to read this and bore you. If you're a chemist, you'll understand it. But what happens is, as we go through the exhaust stream out of the engine, we add ammonia to it, it turns NOx into nitrogen and water vapor by the time it comes out the tailpipe. So it's that simple. It cleans up the air, cleans up the environment as it comes out the tailpipe. The history of SCR, once again, it's a very, very proven technology. One of the reasons all the manufacturers that sit on this panel today went to SCR is because if you do EGR, it adds very high soot load and a lot of black stuff inside your engine, which lowers maintenance cycles and creates problems for emissions. All of this is recorded, so you can pull this off the Waterways website. So one of the other, my history that I have, I grew up on the on-highway side, and I lived the transition from mechanical to electronic to after-treatment systems. I spent my time as a Cummins territory manager, and on the on-highway side, ironically enough, Cummins was going to have two solutions way back in 2009, 2010. One was EGR, one was SCR. They pulled back on the EGR. Basically, the head engineer at Jamestown Engine Plant says, we can't make this stuff work. So at that point, they went to SCR. In the on-highway world, there was only one engine manufacturer that went EGR, which was Navistar. And in a period of two short years, they went from making EGR engines to making no engines, and now they're solely SCR engines. What I'm trying to explain to you guys is, history repeats itself. We've seen it. We know it. It's already happened in the on-highway side. The marine side will transition to SCR. So in two short years, they went from EGR to SCR product. Okay? Once again, engine manufacturers agree on SCR. You've got Cat, Cummins, EMD, MAK, Mitsubishi, MTU, Wärtsilä. If you look at the overall marine portfolio in the world, those are all your major manufacturers. Why is it SCR? It's efficient. It's simple. It's proven. Once again, patented in the 50s, started mobile in the 1990s, and we're in 2019. Okay, so you've got almost 30 years of mobile experience with this technology. It's also very reliable, meaning if anything happens with the SCR system, it's not mission disabling. If you don't have urea, it doesn't inject it, your boat still does the work it's meant to do. On a soot-loaded EGR product, you go through an EGR valve or you plug an EGR cooler, It's engine down. It's mission disabling. So Caterpillar, Jason Spear, they're in booth 117, 50 to 10,000 plus horsepower. Here's a sample of one of their SCR installations on a Kirby vessel. Cummins, which Dave all the way down on the end. Dave, give the crowd a wave. There you go. Okay. He's down in booth 340. Basically, they have horsepowers ranging from 700 to 3,000 horsepower. Once again, you can see the variations of the SCR installations. It's not a force fit to a boat. It's a work with your naval architect and apply the technology to your vessel. Once again, I'm from EMD. We're at booth 729. You know, we did a little different solution. Our footprint stayed the same. We integrated the SCR system into the engine platform with our accessory rack. And finally, last but not least, Tracy with Mitsubishi. They also have two solutions for their SCR systems. So once again, you can see in working, engine manufacturers work with the naval architects to come up with solutions to make this technology fit. And Tracy's in booth 126. So any idea how many gallons of urea were sold in this country last year? Anybody want to take a stab at it? 6 billion gallons of DEF were sold in this country last year. So for those of you that think availability might be a problem, well, let's ask the people that took 6 billion gallons of that for use last year. Urea and the pricing is based on natural gas, which we know is a very, very stable commodity for years to come. And it's also based on fertilizer. Those are your two variables. So with that, keep that in the back of your head as I turn it over to Tony.
Good afternoon, folks. Thank you very much. My name's Tony Odak with Stone Oil. I'm up here representing Stone Oil, but in generality, I'm representing the midstream fueling business. Dave, and we see some folks out here with Jam, and there's some other folks throughout here. I think I see Custom Fuel. But I encourage you, whatever I've got to say here is overarching with all these companies. Basically, we're capitalists. If we can make money at it, I think, generally speaking, you're going to have it. I can speak for Stone Oil, and that is we've made several deliveries. We started delivering DEF in bulk in 2011, and that was through a joint venture with Edison Schwest for some icebreakers and ice class vessels that were operating in the polar Arctic. Subsequently, we've done a lot of initial fills. We've talked to several companies about new builds. Have not done any midstreaming of boats, but we've done several deliveries of urea via barge to ship assets. So we're located on the Mississippi River, Baton Rouge and South, and those were the bulk deliveries off of our barge. What I want to do is stress the first slide. I'm not going to take a whole lot of time. I encourage you all to ask questions. Really do. In the end, if you've got any concerns. But urea available typically in 32.5 and 40%. 32.5 has been run in the on-highway and off-highway sector since, I believe, 2010. As we alluded to, billions of gallons have been sold over these years of urea, urea and diesel exhaust fluid. Basically, we're looking at 40%, and is it selfish? Absolutely. Towboat operators, who wants to push around water? Tell me, how much money y'all make pushing around water? None, right? So that's a solution. Why 40% rather than 32 is just a denser, more effective solution for you all. Smaller tanks to get you further along with a solution. How can you get it? You get it by barge, by tanker, truck, in bulk, in drums. Clearly, you're not going to get quarts of this stuff. The engines, we are all operating. Lot bigger horsepower, a lot more consumption than quart size and gallon size and buckets of stuff you get out of the local gas station. You know, there is a terminal network out there. We've included as many as would give us permission to, but there's a pretty good representation of folks that are supplying it now and will be supplying it in the future. That was kind of the overview. What I wanted to also touch on, and it kind of overlays, is the IMO impact. How many of y'all, just a quick raise of hands, heard about IMO 2020? So for those of you that don't know, IMO 2020 is reducing sulfur regulations come January 1st. And it's really not January 1st. A lot of these ships are having to change over well before January 1st. What's the impact? It's an indirect impact to the marine industry. The indirect impact that marine industry is, look, every place I circled, cost of distillates are going up. Why is the cost of distillates going up? There is a shortage, supply and demand. There is a shortage of distillates. There's a shortage of product going into the shipping market globally. We are next exporter. How many of y'all know U.S. is a net exporter of distillates, of energy, just in general, but of distillates? So general shortage, but there's a general shortage in supply, in refining capacity, and then a general increase in demand, global demand. We being a net exporter, we've got the pots and pans on the Gulf Coast. Pots and pans, we've got the refineries to make the most efficient distillate, diesel. So it's not only your marine diesel that's going to go up, highway diesels. I mean, we've got economy boats, Pilot, Flying J. I mean, I'm anxious to hear what Dave has got to say, but I think their analysis is going to be the same thing. Generally speaking, the cost of fuel will be going up. So something to take a look at when your OEMs now are telling you, you know, there's a cost differential between the EGR, operating the EGR engine, and operating the SCR engine. Just give that some thought, and that was the whole background. It's an indirect impact, but, you know, you're going from $2 and change to possibly $3 and change. If I knew, I wouldn't be working for Johnny Stone. I'd be better than a black magic ball here. So, again, we go back to 40% urea. Again, 32.5% is readily available, 40% not as readily available. But how many of y'all want to push around water? You know, the reason I've got this up here is multi-reason, is this gives you a spec, but to tell you that one of the big cautions, I caution everybody out there, is this is not agricultural urea. You know, don't go to the farm store, pick up Prilform urea. Am I right, Tim? Don't pick up Prilform urea and go to your tap, shake up a batch of 40% urea by weight and say, oh, I'm good. I've got, if anybody wants it, and I'm willing to share it with everybody, pictures upon pictures of contamination issues with it. Now, with that being said, you know, your suppliers, your midstreamers, have got secure distribution networks. They've got secure supply, whether they're blending it themselves and meeting the required requirements of AUS 40 or whatever it may be. There's also an ISO spec out there. But please get with them. Don't look for, you know, a half-baked operator or half-baked distributor that's going to sell you some stuff at a discount. And in the long run, you're going to have problems with your engine. You're going to have problems with the SCR, your injectors, your catalysts. You're going to have many more problems with a non-quality product out there. Finally, this is a rough indication where it's available. So in general, we spoke to the distributors on the river, on the East Coast, and along the Texas coast. You know, where is it? Well, we'd be stupid as an industry, as midstreamers, to say, no, Mr. Customer, I don't want to make money off of that. Does that make any sense? We got capitalists out there, right? Y'all not-for-profits? Anybody not-for-profit out there? No. No, Austin, you're not a not-for-profit? No. Okay. Everywhere that you want it is eventually going to be available. I can't say it's going to be available tomorrow in every size, but without a doubt, it will be available. You know, we have to go through the growing pains of getting the supply and all that, but it will be available at all those locations. Pretty much, I guess the blanket statement is where you pick up fuel, you'll be able to eventually pick up DEF or urea. Will you be able to pick it up in the size you want, the quantities you want? No. So my suggestion is, as this market's building, it's a fledgling market, as it's building, every time you fuel, pick up a shot of urea. It's not going to hurt you, you know. But rather than get somewhere and not have urea, you'd rather pick it up somewhere, overload. I say not overload, but load up your tanks, then get to a location that may not have the quantities you want. I encourage you all, ask questions of all, everybody. Like I said, there's a plethora, not right now, but there's a plethora of distributors up here. David's up here with the economy. Like I said, I see Jam, I see Custom Fuel out here. Anybody, any other distributors, just raise your hands. But there's plenty of us out there. We know what's going on. And don't be afraid of this. There's another thing I want to just put out there. You know, it was caustic. Everybody said that it's very caustic and this is it could hurt you. We've been delivering it. We've been delivering it since 2011. Our truck drivers have. I mean, I encourage our truck drivers, take every precaution you do with diesel. How many of y'all are concerned about when you pump your tanker man or your deckhands or whoever it may be, your PICs are taking fuel on board your vessels? How many of y'all are concerned about, oh, man, that is a really caustic product. What if that guy gets it in his eyes? Not really, huh? We're comfortable with that. This is 60% water, folks. What do you do? What do you do if you went to the bathroom and you had an accident? What's the next thing you do? Let's hope you all wash your hands. So that's my solution. Wash your hands. If you feel the need for glasses, for eye protection, wear them. Same precautions you would take for handling diesel on board are the same precautions you should take when handling urea. Again, I encourage you all, when you're done, ask myself or any of the other folks up here, you know, the OEMs as well, about I call it urea or diesel exhaust fluid. Whatever you've got, the availability is there. Don't be scared of it. I've been talking with the naval architects and shipyards for 3 years now about designing all this. Is it a cost? Yeah, but balance the cost of urea and the installation of that versus the cost of an EGR system. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. I'm going to build a little bit on what Tony shared. My name is David Reynolds with Economy Boat Store. And, you know, coming into the industry on a day-to-day basis right around July 1st of last year, having discussions with customers and OEMs, it was all about availability and what does the network for DEF demand look like. And so, you know, fortunately for Economy Boat Store, we are part of a larger network that basically is responsible for fuel distribution coast to coast. And so while our familiarity from a waterway standpoint is obviously in the inland space, our parent organization, which is Pilot Thomas Logistics, is a fuel distribution specialist in basically 37 states, serving various end users and end markets. From the oil field industry to the mining, the traditional commercial and industrial industries, basically industries across the country that have had to adopt at a much more rapid pace than what we've seen on the inland waterways. And so from our standpoint, you know, we've not really seen the demand build on the inland side of the house, but from a supplier standpoint, we're here to tell you that the availability is there. And the supply network exists when and where that time does present itself. You know, reliability of supply is what we pride ourselves on as a differentiated supplier out there. And I think Tony said it very well. You know, the reality is it's Econ 101. You know, supply will match the demand. And so as the demand forecast builds, as I migrated in, we instantly looked at DEF as a business case and an opportunity. And we, Economy Boat Store, much like the rest of the midstreamers in the space, will be prepared to make the appropriate levels of investment when, obviously, the need presents itself. So building on that, through the Pilot Thomas Network, which, again, is the Economy Boat Store parent company, you know, we didn't touch the $6 billion that Jerry alluded to, so I think we need to work on our market share a little bit. But we're distributing a little over 1 million gallons on an annualized basis. We've done a very limited number of deliveries in the inland space. We've, frankly, just done a few tote deliveries, just a few thousand gallons here and there, so it's been very spotty. We have access to, I won't call it proprietary in nature, but we have access to some turnkey dispensing, storage and dispensing solutions that have already been introduced into other industries as well. So again, not marine specific at this point, But there's certainly some technologies there that we're capable of leveraging to deal with all the challenges that come with urea, whether it's crystallization, storage in poly or stainless tanks, et cetera, et cetera. I mentioned coming in, last July or so and looking at the business case immediately, expecting that DEF will be here eventually and the need will be here. We've gone ahead and basically built out the supply chain, the system-wide supply chain. So we do have the capability, obviously, to bring that into our locations. Basically, again, as soon as the demand develops. And so our specialty is sourcing, storage, and distribution. And we're certainly capable of doing that on the inland waterways and in the Gulf of Mexico. So building on that, kind of a shameless plug for economy. Here's our network of locations spanning, from Wood River, Illinois, down the Mississippi to our joint venture with Tony Odak and the Stone folks out of Baton Rouge, and then eastward into Mobile, Alabama, and the Gulf of Mexico. Three of those locations are full service. Full service for us includes, the groceries, the marine supplies, the crew changes, warehousing and distribution, et cetera, and then the partial service locations, which are really focused on fuel and fuel services. St. Louis Harbor, again, the joint venture with Stone Oil and Baton Rouge, and then our location in Mobile, Alabama, which operates under Radcliffe Economy Marine Services as opposed to the Economy Boat Store brand. And then again, building on the shameless plug, just kind of a comprehensive suite of what we do at Economy. Fortunate, we've been around since 1936. We've been in the fueling game since the 1950s. And so amongst not only fuel, lubricants, chemical solutions, including DEF, we also provide the additional set of offerings in the terms of crew changes, groceries, and supplies. In Mobile, we do a couple of other different things, including some truck rack sales and also some bulk storage tank leasing. So I think the thing to really take home, like Tony said, whether it's, Stone Oil, Custom Fuels, Ergon, Economy, et cetera, you go on and on through the midstreamers. I would not be concerned in terms of availability. Our commitment to you from the midstreamer standpoint across the industry is to service the needs of our customers. And so as those build and those develop, and they inevitably will, I think I'll speak for all of us that we'll be there ready to serve you guys as needed. So that was it for prepared comments. So.
So it's available, it's ready, and I'd like to elaborate a little on the IMO 2020 cap, because we only had a few people raise their hands on what it is. Basically, what happens, Blue Water is the largest consumer of fuel in the world. They have to go to 3.5 parts per million diesel. So basically what that does, 0.5. So that creates a strain on our diesel. So like Tony said, we will be an exporter because they're going to want to pay more for it so they can mix it with a heavy fuel oil to get the sulfur content down. Okay? So even though oil barrel prices might not change too much, it's a supply strain capacity which is going to cause the increased demand and price of your fuel. So with that, any questions out in the field at all? Don't be shy. Yes, sir. Hang on. If I heard you correctly, the ratio of DEF to diesel fuel, I think we're safe to say 3 to 5%, and I'll consult with my other guys. Yes, everybody's nodding their head. So I'll walk down into the field now. Yeah. That was nasty. All right, any other questions down here? Yes.
How much? Sorry. Is there an estimate of how much DEF has been consumed maybe last year on the river? Is there much actually being consumed?
So as far as river,
Let me define my definition of river. So Baton Rouge South ships, we've done a substantial amount of ships. So in the hundreds of thousands of gallons, we deliver in bulk to ships. But clearly, that's not you all. I don't think. Inland vessels, we haven't done any, not one inland vessel, in way of reloading of urea. What we have done is initial fills. Initial fills of Moran, initial fills of McAllister, initial fills of Kirby. We've, Stone in particular, and I'm not trying to single out Stone, but to give you all some area of comfort, and that is we've been working with the naval architects and the shipyards. We've been talking to owners, and I don't want to name the owners, but there's several owners that I saw out here. We've been talking to them as far as, you know, capability, distribution, you know, is it going to be available and how they're going to receive it. So I'm here to say it's comfortable. I can't tell you that we've done any reloads for river customers. Those Morans, McAllisters, and Kirby's that Stone has done and Edison Schwest, those were coastwise vessels.
Yeah, from our standpoint, very limited basis. I actually reference, you know, just a few tote deliveries, probably a few thousand gallons during 2018. I think we've only done one delivery thus far in 2019. So very limited basis at this point.
Out of curiosity, has there been any testing or is there any approvals on its use with biodiesel? And is there any reactivity or concern, either up to B20 or even over?
Tony, I'll start with this one. So from an EMD perspective, we approve up to a B5 level. So I'll let Dave, Tracy, and Jason what their biodiesel limits are.
Ours, even with SCR, is up to B20.
As far as the testing that Mitsubishi's done on the biodiesel, I'm not sure. But I can find that out if you need me to.
From a Cummins perspective, it's B5 as well. It's just too damaging beyond B5 for us right now.
Okay. I got an opinion.
Yeah. The question was really is with urea.
Well, let me answer this. I'm not an expert at anything, but I got an opinion about everything. Some of y'all know me.
We'll take it for
welcome.
What it's worth.
My answer is, you know, I hope y'all know that urea is injected into the exhaust stream. I don't know, and I guess I'm going to ask the OEMs. Does it matter? I mean, if your engine's capable of burning B1, B5, B17, B20, I don't think that makes a difference. It's the SCR, you know. You're reacting to the components of combustion. So I don't know that's a generality comment. Is I don't know that exhaust stream cares whether it's a B1 or B99. You know, your system's going to test for it and inject appropriately.
Yeah, it's going to measure NOx in and NOx out is what the system does. Biodiesel is known to increase NOx a little bit in some tests. So you could go through that 3 to 5% consumption rate of urea could be increased a little bit more with biodiesel.
But that's just speculation.
That's speculation. We haven't tested it. If anybody's willing to give us a bunch of bio, we'd be happy to test it and go from there. So, but, yeah, we could certainly do something. Any other questions out in the field?
I have a question for EMD. Don't you have a EGR solution with the DPF on locomotive?
Our rail product is a different engine. The model number is a 1010. It is an EGR-based product because of the railroads. So I'll give two factors to that. One is we've had a few railroads come back to us and say, we want an SCR solution. So we are quoting those as well. And the other factor on the 1010 product, you know, both us and the other guys, you know, they're experiencing some growing pains with the new product line. So I'll just leave it at that. Okay, any other questions?
So with the to the B20 or biodiesel, one caution would be under combustion, the reaction against the catalyst requires heat. So your precious elements in your catalyst can't be poisoned with biodiesel. So that's a watch out to make sure you don't poison your catalyst, because then you don't have any reaction. The other thing is it requires heat to make the catalyst reaction. So on towboats, you get a lot of heat going up the river. You don't get a lot of heat going down the river. So you said it's not mission disabling, but I seriously doubt the EPA is going to let you run inevitably without emissions compliance.
Again, have an opinion about everything. My answer to that is I'm not disagreeing, but at least some of the comments I've had from the OEMs, questions come up repeatedly, is I can't speak for all of them, but I know some of y'all have engines that don't inject until at least 40% load, and then have even heater systems. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we control temperatures at the low end and at the top end, too, because there is a finite line that, you know, the Vanadia SCR reacts, right? And so at the high end, you know, we limit our temperatures like 525 degrees to make sure that we're not giving off vanadium pentoxide gas. On the low end, we're making sure that hydrocarbons aren't building up, right? So we've got a thermal management strategy built into our software that's continually integrated with the engine, monitoring the engine, and making sure that those loads are withstand in the temperature range that are needed. If they're not, it gives the operator a couple of different warnings, and at which point it'll tell them how to properly resolve those temperatures. You know, increase to this point, do this for this long. And if you don't do that, if you ignore that, at some point there will be a slight derate to make sure that those emissions levels are sustained. So,
and in this industry, what we've experienced and we've discussed with some of our customers, whether we're traveling upriver, downriver, east or west, we're going to have delays. We're either going to be sitting at the dock, we're going to be sitting at the locks, we're going to have traffic. So those are all instances that we're going to have to deal with these systems, and we're going to have to mitigate those low load scenarios. And with that situation that we're running into, we've discussed that, and it's a little bit of a different operation. However, the operators just need to work with it, and we can coach through that, producing that load and producing that heat to where the SCR system can operate effectively.
I'll just and give a couple of thoughts from the Cummins side, too. And we do essentially a lot of what you have already heard. We've got some software that continually monitors the low temperature conditions. We also have combustion strategies that produce heat. we also have some other mechanical products on the engine. In some instances that allow more heat, even turning off one side of the engine versus keeping one bank going. So from our perspective, hopefully you won't see regenerations or low load conditions occur. Inevitably, I'm sure it will in some cases. But we're preparing and planning for that with regard to the system itself. It's not a mission disabling issue. It is more or less just related to the catalyst and noncompliance of emissions. And there are EPA regulations on how to deal with that.
Any other questions out in the field? Yes, sir.
When you talk about heat strategies, what specifically do you do with your engine to increase the heat of the after of the exhaust box?
I mean, kind of as David mentioned, you know, some of the things we do is, you know, in-cylinder cutout. The EPA actually has for a prop demand curve, you know, there's four different emissions mode points that we have to hit, right? So there's a, I forget, it's a mode zero, is it 25%? Is that mode four? So it's 25% load and below is really where they're really, the emissions constituents are really targeted at, right? So if we can make sure that we're meeting temperatures at that point, you know, theoretically, we can still meet the cycle requirements and those mode point requirements and not typically dose down lower than that at urea. So that's part of the challenge is to, you know, make sure we're being emissions compliant, but at the same time, we try to go up and stay into the intent of the regulation as well. So we've chosen to actually continue to dose urea down as low as we possibly can and keep the temperatures in check. So.
And I think it's pretty consistent along all of us. We want to make the engines and keep y'all's costs down as much as possible so we're not wasting urea. I mean, that's what y'all are looking for.
So are there situations where you're burning fuel in the exhaust? That's never a situation that you'll burn fuel in the after.
We don't burn any fuel. No heaters or anything like that. No afterburners, nothing like that. It's all controlled with the combustion in cylinder.
Yeah. Yep. And I'll add to that, just all the engine manufacturers, we have strict guidelines from the EPA. We use a certain fuel, we test a certain way, and our emissions equipment has to be calibrated. Okay, bio isn't part of that equation. So for us to get the sticker or the stamp or the certification from the EPA, we have to follow the letter of the law that they do. So if bio needs to become more prevalent or whatever, then that needs to get into the EPA regs, and then we would design accordingly. Any other questions out in the field?
In general, is there a target number for efficiency difference in Tier 3 and Tier 4?
Yeah, actually, we saw a big advantage when it came to Tier 4 to make the engines more efficient, right? So now we've spent the last, you know, since what, 2007, I guess, when EPA Tier 1 came out, retarding injection timing, getting worse on efficiency, fuel economy, going the wrong direction. With Tier 4, now we're able to let the engine breathe. For the first time, we've now advanced timing, injection timing, and we're getting that engine back to where it's most comfortable, and we've lowered our fuel consumption drastically. So between Tier 3 and Tier 4 on average, I'm going to just talk generally about our 3500 product line here that operates between 1,000 kilowatts and 25 kilowatts, it's about a 3.5% overall in general, depends on your load profile, depends on the rating, but roughly about 3.5% fuel efficiency improvement. So we're utilizing the SCR as the advantage to let the engine operate where it needs to be. Yep.
We gained some efficiency. However, with our Tier 4 solution, we are still fully mechanical. So we don't have the advantage of working with the ECU to really hone in on our fuel consumption and those types of things. But we did gain some efficiency, and it is that did allow us to save a little bit of money and bring those intervals up a little bit, but not the same as the electronic engines.
Cummins saw some efficiencies as well. I don't want to brag any here, but 3% rated, and we're looking at the cycle of about anywhere between 6% and 8%, and it depends on how you use your vessel, obviously. But the good part about being able to advance is if you think about your Tier 3 fuel consumption versus your fluid consumption in Tier 4, hopefully, over the cycle, it's basically a zero, net zero. So, and that's what we're aiming to do, is to provide you with the ability not to have to change your cost over the lifetime of the engine on fuel consumption. I mean, you had fuel consumption tier three. Now you've got tier four, which we call fluid consumption, which is a combination of fuel and DEF. So if you can net zero that, then that makes folks feel a lot more comfortable. So it's pretty close to that.
So, Dave, that's a great lead-in. So if it's a wash between urea and fuel, I'm going to spin it back to Tony and Dave. We know fuel's going to go up with IMO 2020. What's DEF going to do pricing-wise as you guys get more customers on the river?
Take a lead.
Yeah, I'll take that. I think what we've seen is, you know, naturally over time, things will be commoditized. I think if you look right now out there, there's probably a premium associated with DEF. And again, it's just on such a limited basis right now, in full transparency. As that demand profile develops, like we've talked about, I would see, you know, the midstream market be very competitive in terms of pricing, much like what you see on, you know, the diesel side or ULSD side of the house, at least from what we supply. So I think that I'll build on what someone said. We've seen, and it's a little bit of a conflict of interest, but there, you know, fuel efficiency upwards of 6 to 8% is kind of what we would peg on some of that. There's certainly an offset in terms of DEF. We've seen price points at $2.50 a gallon up to $3 a gallon. And so where that goes long term, I think it's just, again, it goes back to what does the demand really look like in the marketplace? What's the volume look like? You're talking about 500 gallons to 1,000 gallons per delivery. If you're taking, you know, a very large, you know, 25,000, 30,000 gallon fuel delivery, obviously, depending on the horsepower of your vessel, that's going to be reflective of where that price point or where the volume you're consuming or taking on is.
In general, I'll underscore what David just said, but y'all know the term the last mile. The last mile is a cost. That's where your cost is. It's in the infrastructure cost. So sourcing it is not so much an issue. Quality sourcing it, a little bit of an issue for the midstreamers. You got to have quality. But it's that last mile, getting it to your boat, getting it to your flange. That's where the cost is. You know, it is a commodity. I think it was brought up, I don't know who brought it up earlier, but, you know, fertilizer, natural gas. Fertilizer, natural gas go up, you know, it's a commodity. It's going to go up, absolutely. Are suppliers going to take advantage of that? I don't know if take advantage of it is necessarily the answer, but are they going to leave money on the table? I don't think so. But then there's infrastructure costs. What's the infrastructure cost? Just like you all on the boats are going to need stainless steel or carbon steel with appropriately coated tanks, you know, we'll need stainless steel tanks. We'll need to have stainless steel trucks, and they're just not any stainless steel trucks, but we'll have to have stainless steel trucks to get it from the manufacturer to, let's say, the barge or to the reloading location. Then we need stainless steel pumps. We need stainless steel or non-reactive pumps. We have to have non-reactive stainless steel or non-reactive hoses, lines to the pumps, then to the meters. So all this is not cheap. It's not carbon steel. It's stainless steel and on the vast majority, specialized stainless steel and or non-reactive piping or hoses. So it's that last mile that is the bulk of the infrastructure cost. Just like any other fledging industry. How many of y'all looked at LNG? Oh, LNG, so natural gas is so cheap. No, it's so cheap until you get it to the boat. It's that last mile that costs you. And this is no different. Fledging industry on the marine side, not so much. I mean, how many billions of gallons have been serviced? I mean, I'm telling you, you know, Stone, we've delivered, I'd say last year, 2018, a ballpark number, 85 to 100,000 gallons of urea. We call it urea because it's 40% to ships. You know, it was substantial, and it was a very volatile market. Some months it was low, some months it was high.
One thing I'll build on that is right now there's not an index tied to DEF. I think that's something you may see similar to, you know, you know, Platts, Gulf Coast Platts, Argus, various forms of indexes that are out there relative to fuel. Right now, you don't have that in the DEF space. Over time, you know, 6 billion gallon industry, those things may come about, which that will certainly impact the pricing and give you some visibility and transparency into that pricing as well.
Just a quick question on the DEF. What is the shelf life before it starts to degrade? How long can you keep it in tanks? What size tanks should I be looking at?
Yeah, generally we just say about a year, I would say.
Just some color around that is, so talking to naval architects and the shipyards, you know, Dave is absolutely right. Year, you know, with ambient temperature, no problem. Elevated temperatures or cold temperatures, it's gonna degrade faster. Crystallize, you may have some other issues around that. But the tanks aren't designed. I mean, look, we're a midstream fueler. You know, we carry around fuel, but we're not in the business of carrying around fuel. We're in the business of giving you fuel, just like urea. You're not in the business of hauling urea around or DEF. You're going to put in an appropriately sized tank, so that tank may service you for, I'm going to guess, I'm looking for some of the naval architects out there, shipyards I see in the back that we've talked to, you know, maybe 14 days, maybe 20 days. You know, are you going to take it every 14, 20 days? Look at what David just said. I absolutely agree with him. Depending on ambient temperatures, yeah, it should last a year. But you should have consumed that tank. And I'm not saying consume it 100%, but just like you do in your fuel tank. When you get low, you're going to top it off, right? You know, you're not hauling around. It's not very wise to haul around product that when you, you know, you could be running much more efficiently. So the urea tank's going to be sized appropriately so you consume it in according fashion.
Any other questions? Okay, with that, I'll leave one final note, and we're probably going to get beeped here when I walk by the speaker again, so hang on. Okay, so basically you've heard it's going to be available. And one of the thoughts I'll leave you with, you've seen a bunch of engine manufacturers, we basically all have the same story. The SCR aftertreatment system is the right technology for the marine market because we're not mission disabling, plain and simple. Your boat can do the job it's meant to do. You've got everybody's booth number. We can all provide life cycle cost analysis for you to compare what an SCR-based product is. Versus a non-SCR-based product. And with that, I thank you very much for your time. If there's any other questions, we'll field them. If not, enjoy the rest of the show.